Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Good, the Bad, and the Hungy. This week, recording before Dynamite takes place. It is April Fool's Day, so not as a joke, just as a whoops, I don't look at calendars because I'm a big dumb idiot. We have a wonderful guest on. Of course, Tyler is here, but the lovely Suit Williams is joining us. He's working on a project right now where he goes through his top 50 WrestleMania matches of all time. I write about it on his lovely blog. Let's get the plugs in, Suit, before I, an idiot, forget.
Yes, suitwilliams.com, suitwilliams.com. You can check out my countdown as it's running. We are through 50 through, I believe, number 11. And starting 10 days before WrestleMania, I will be counting down the top 10 matches, one per day, all leading into WrestleMania 42, which I will also be reviewing on suitwilliams.com live as it happens. You can check that out. I also have other watch projects such as Williams Watches WrestleMania, where I watched every WrestleMania show, every match except one, the Firefly Funhouse. I got to get paid to watch that one. I am currently doing As Good As It Gets, my 1997 retrospective. I am currently through May. I just got started with Best of the Super Juniors for New Japan, Best of the Super Junior 4. Coming up, we've got a very big volume 11. We've got Shawn Michaels versus Stone Cold at King of the Ring. We have got some big All Japan matches. It's going to be a big one. So that's going to be dropping the Monday after WrestleMania. So WrestleMania week's going to be very big at suitwilliams.com. You can check that out. Also, I will be having a WrestleMania preview over at voicesofwrestling.com, where I will be getting everybody ready for the big, air quotes,
the granddaddy of them all.
The
great uncle.
I don't really know what to call this one. This is just second, not been
the second cousin once removed of them all.
There you go. I will be previewing this year's WrestleMania for Voices of Wrestling. So be sure to keep an eye out for that.
You know, let's talk about, we'll get to the this year's card here in a second. I got to touch on two because it is the bit, you know, as such as it is, we do cover the AEW news here. It is a quiet week with the ear to the ground for AEW. The only big story I saw was that Josh Alexander is going to have knee surgery. After a what is called a quote pretty severe end quote injury, according to F4W, you will see exactly what that pertains. If that is going to be like a year out, or if it's going to be 3 to 6 months. But once again, a Don Callis family member goes down. It's kind of a cursed stable that is fortunately made up of 75 people, so you can't really tell. Next man up. And then the second biggest story is Wardlow is going to be on American Gladiators. So what a quiet ass week.
Hey, don't forget, good old Jesse Godders is also going to be on the new American Gladiators.
That's right. Yeah. I've already closed out the tab on that. I don't care. Who gives a shit?
I had Jesse Godders stock for a little while. That didn't work out.
No.
I think we had Wardlow stock for a little bit, and that also currently not working out.
If Jesse Godders was born in 1969, that dude would have been a legend. He was just born a little too late.
Yeah. They also got they do have the Boogs on it. Rick Boogan, whatever the rest of his last name is.
Oh yeah, that guy. Forgot
Super Jack
him.
Guy.
Wore his quad at a WrestleMania. How about that?
Bad time. WrestleMania 40, what the hell are we on now? 42?
It was supposed to God be in bless. New Orleans. It is not.
Yeah, the swerve, y'all. A man in a black mask hit New Orleans across the back of the head. And now it's going to be in Las Vegas. That great Triple H booking. Just getting you guys there. You know, this doesn't exactly feel like a big star power card by any stretch. I mean, the two men's main events are Roman Reigns going after CM Punk and Randy Orton challenging Cody Rhodes in the year of our Lord 2026. It's got to have that, you know, 1987 house show style main event at WrestleMania. And the women's title matches aren't much better. Liv Morgan against Stephanie McFakir and Rhea Ripley challenging Jade Cargill. Not great. Suit, your thoughts?
Yeah, the card, a lot of singles matches. Lot of just... There are pieces here that can make like an exciting card.
There's some decent looking matches on paper, but as far as, you know, like excitement, I'm not getting that from the WWE fans.
Yeah, a lot of them aren't like in the right spot. Like the women's matches are just, let's hope a good worker can get something out of the other one, because Stephanie Vaquer, yeah. Liv Morgan, like, I don't really know. Like, I like Liv Morgan well enough. She tries hard. The Dom thing got over, but she's not like the star of that act. And to treat her like one is tough. You know, you stick Rhea Ripley with Jade Cargill, hope you get a miracle there, like you got with the Chris Statlander match. You know, we got Sami Zayn and Trick Williams for the U.S. title, which feels like, hey, we got to get the U.S. title on the card. Let's just stick it on Sami Zayn and go from there. Finn Balor versus Dom. That's 12 minutes of my life I'm never getting back. Jacob Fatu and Drew McIntyre, which, man, remember Jacob Fatu? He was going to be a thing.
I will say that I think this could be a good match. There's several on here that like have no pop to them, but I think could end up delivering like low level notebook stuff.
Drew's kind of washed.
You know, he's just 2 years removed from the five star though, with Gunter and Sheamus beating the shit out of each other as well. But if they do just like hit me as hard as you can match, I can see that being good.
Yeah. Seth Rollins and Gunther, which I have so many problems with. My opponent got hurt, so we'll just stick you with each other. Like, all right, cool, whatever. It's not like Gunther retired John Cena or anything. What's a plan? Who cares? So yeah, this just feels like a show that is indicative of WWE's year, which has been marred with injuries and poor forward planning, and now, you know, we got to deal with Randy Orton in a main event that's going to go 35 minutes and maybe be three stars. You got CM Punk and Roman Reigns, which we'll see if Punk can get anything out of Roman. Like, Roman, it's funny watching all these WrestleManias. And I talked about this with Jesse Collins last year when I was doing the original series. Roman is very dependent on the guy he's wrestling. Like, from his first main event with Brock going forward, up until, like, that first Cody match, which I think was phenomenal, like, legitimately would have been, if Cody wins, that's one of the three best Mania matches ever, in my opinion. I won't tell you what the other ones are, because I don't want to spoil, but it's in the pantheon there. But outside of that, Roman's output is just not what you would want from a top guy like that. He gets eaten up a lot. He's very dependent on the other guys. It's very, you know, like Cena would, like John Cena and Hulk Hogan, they would take main events and they would really like lift them up as best they could, you know. They had their duds, you know, Sergeant Slaughter, The Miz. You can only do so much, but those guys would, like, lift them up, and Roman just hasn't been able to that often. We'll see if Punk can do it in his, you know, B-minus kind of stage he's in now. He'll be motivated because he's in the real main event now, but, you know, he is also closer to 50 than he ever was, so we'll see how that goes. But ultimately, I don't see these shows being super. They aren't highly anticipated, and I don't see the work on the night being enough to make up for it.
I don't think anything on this is touching like a match of the year list, you know. Yeah. There's a pleasant surprise, you know, to see it, but I just don't see the pieces to put together for anything that great.
I love how Sue talks about how Roman's so dependent on the person, because my first thought was, oh my gosh, he's Ruby Soho. Fred, if you're
what a comp.
I don't know if you remember that bit from the show.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Everything Ruby Soho did was based on who she was with. And
yeah. It's,
Roman is kind of the same way.
Like, yeah, he kind of is.
The really smart move would just be to take the Goldberg formula and just do it with Roman. And yeah. I mean, you can do a little bit longer matches, but just have him do cool shit. Just have him do cool shit, 15 minutes in and out. Like,
I remember WrestleMania 32, him and Triple H, that god-awful match. Oh, I was advocating going into that show at the time, just do Ultimate Warrior Triple H and just have him no sell a pedigree, spear, minute and a half, get out of here. Like,
but that would involve Triple H not doing a 35-minute main event, though.
Yes, we can't have that.
I will say the best Roman Reigns Mania matches, and this is kind of the formula I think for the best Roman Reigns matches, period, are the three ways where he is in there with people that are better than him, and he gets to kind of work around them. You know, you got the Daniel Bryan Edge one for Mania 37 that I thought was great, and then I think one of the better Mania matches ever was the Seth Rollins cash-in, and with Brock Lesnar when Brock was still like. Yeah, on the younger side, at least, and,
when his act was more novel.
Yeah, and he was more going for it, I guess, than just like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, that 31 match. It might have made the back. I think it did make the back end of my list, but that 31 match was fascinating because it was there was a real energy in the crowd because Brock had just re-signed, so now it felt like a little more open. And then you had the people like it was a good Roman performance because he was just getting his ass kicked. So he was really kind of, it felt like, okay, maybe if they go with him here, it would be good. But they kind of chickened out there, but they had a very memorable finish there. So they got out of it.
I will say, that match has probably my favorite spear of all time, where right before Rollins hits the curb stomp on Roman, Roman hits Brock with the spear, but it looks like a shoot. Like, yeah. Brock doesn't go down. He doesn't jump up. He just takes it. His back end just moves with the spear, and then he collapses to the ground like he's actually being tackled. I love that.
I think he had Rollins on his shoulders there for the F5, and then Roman came in with the spear, and then the stomp happened. So, yeah, Brock's a great seller, man. He's been on the list a couple times, I don't think he's getting on there this year. But hey, they got a fighting chance. It's the Obafemi match is the hottest match on the show by a stretch, I would say.
I love when things feel like a shoot.
Yeah.
We're not trying to create it, but wrestling sometimes gets too over choreographed. And when I see something like that, it's like, that's the stuff. Let's make it feel like he's like, cause he had the diverticulitis. So him just kind of like absorbing it and then collapsing like that makes sense in kayfabe, makes sense in real life. Like,
yeah,
I don't, but we don't have to make these things look theatrical. No, make it look like it fucking hurts.
The Goldberg matches were great because he would sell those spears and Goldberg would lay him in. And yeah, Heyman out there still trying. He was panicking on the floor like, Brock, what are you doing? And then, man, those Goldberg matches rocked. Goldberg so, rocks.
Don't let Warren Hayes hear you say that, just for your own good.
Yeah.
hey, he's too busy clubbing seals to listen to this show anyways.
So you've been doing the rewatch project. Suit, has anything surprised you with how much you liked it?
There were a few. I remember Cena Rock 2, which gets a lot of crap because it was a lot of finishers. But I think in the context of the show, because those two just followed Triple H and Brock Lesnar for 25 minutes, putting 70,000 people to sleep, they had to follow that, and they had to get the crowd back. So it's just like, all right, let's just do finishers. And eventually they got the crowd back into it. So that one is one where I was like, man, that one's good. Good on that one. There were some more. I don't have the list handy. I'm on my podcasting computer. So it's a little different setup than I'm used to. Let me see if I can pull it up on Google Sheets as I'm going. Another match that I didn't think I would like as much as looking at the names was from WrestleMania 1, Sheik and Volkov versus the US Express. It's in the honorable mentions. And I was surprised that like Sheik and Volkov were like mobile. I guess I hadn't seen them very mobile ever. So seeing them bump all around and like do cool stuff was like, all right, look at these guys go. How about that? And then there's a match. Is it out yet? Yes, it is. It's number 12 on my list. Charlotte Flair versus Ronda Rousey. Now, I wrote about it. I understand why the vibes were so low going into that match, because it's Charlotte getting another title match at WrestleMania. It's Ronda Rousey not exactly looking great headed into WrestleMania. There's all the outside stuff with Ronda. Feel how you feel about that. Justifiably so. But that match is just those two just beating each other up. Like, it's as good, and I think a little better than both of the Rhea Ripley matches Charlotte had. And those matches, you know, are very acclaimed. And I like those matches a lot. But this is what put it over the top for me that, oh, I just think Ronda Rousey's a good pro wrestler. So that was a match where I was just shocked at how great I thought it was. That would be like my biggest riser coming out of all these WrestleMania shows, because I had never seen it and I had heard, you know, nothing but bad things about it. The cage match score isn't very high, but if you watch that match again, I think you'd be floored. Like, good Lord, they are going for it here.
I don't remember that match.
Yeah, I don't have much memory of that one either.
Yeah. It was Mania 38. It was either the one with Austin versus Owens or the Roman Brock 3. So that was it was a show Cody came back in. So I wasn't watching it live either, but going back and watching it, it really caught me off guard how good I thought that match was.
Any others sticking out to you that you want to put over?
Floyd Mayweather and the Big Show.
Yeah, I was surprised by Reiki for that one.
Yeah, I remember liking that match when I first watched it, and then I watched it again in the series, and I'm like, man, Floyd knows what he's doing in there. Like, I don't think he'd be like, he's great, a great celebrity wrestler. You know, he is, like, Logan Paul was a great celebrity wrestler, but now he's just a wrestler, and now he's just green and not very good. Floyd couldn't do this, like, forever, but he was really good on the night. I thought Big Show was a really good like babyface foil for him. I really loved Floyd's act. Like it all, like that all came together really well, where it kind of reminded me of like Owen Hart a little bit, where he was just this like annoying little twerp who was very
pissant.
Like, yeah, he was very, he was bragging and he had like his big pyro and his mink coat and he landed a couple shots on Big Show. He goes to his corner and he's got like a gold chalice that he sipped water out of. And it's like, man, this is a good act.
He just, people forget how much boxing is really like professional wrestling. Once you get in the ring, it's really different. But everything else.
I mean, Muhammad Ali was just, you know, Gorgeous George. You know, going back that far, even.
You know, Conor McGregor was, you know, Ric Flair, Vince, in some of the bad ways, too. Whatever happened.
Yeah.
Thunderlips, baby.
Yeah, it was a really good showcase of his, like, of the skills that made him such a marketable boxer outside of the ring. And he was able to put it in the wrestling ring and have just a really, really good match with Big Show. And then I'm looking at the others. The first Money in the Bank match is a great ladder match. Like
it is. It truly is.
It's, you know, you wouldn't think it holds up. Like a lot of the WrestleMania ladder matches do hold up. Like the early ones. Let me make sure I'm not spoiling anything. Yeah, that's the only one I can talk about right now. But yeah, Money in the Bank 1, just really well structured. It peaks very high. And one thing they did that I think was very smart was the only weapon used for 99% of the match were ladders. So everybody was doing their spots with ladders and being creative. You had Shelton Benjamin being super athletic. And then at the end, you had Edge hit Chris Benoit with a chair. And so it felt like he was cheating and it felt, and he got like huge heat for it. And then he won. And it was like, man, that was a really good way to make something feel underhanded, even though it was allowed. So it was just, you know, well-structured. You had a bunch of the guys who were in the TLC matches in it. So that doesn't surprise me, but yeah, that's another one where I'm like, wow, that held up a lot better than I thought.
Yeah, that's in my, I don't really have a ranked list, but that's in my top 12 matches of all time in Mania's history. Yeah.
And then, oh, one that didn't make the list, but I was just talking about it was Brock Lesnar versus Dean Ambrose from WrestleMania 32. A lot of people, myself included, have that match in their heads of like, man, that was disappointing. That wasn't really working. Like going into the match, the vibes were bad because it was like Brock had another UFC fight coming up, and there was like talk that there was a lot of stuff he didn't want to do. So the vibes were off. Yeah. You go back and watch that match. It's like a 3.5, 3.75. Like it's a good match, you know? Like, and we're talking about matches that kind of over-delivered. There are, like, shows in this, like, period that, like, weren't as bad as I remember them. I wouldn't, like, up, like, they would go up maybe, like, half a letter grade. So if I thought they were, like, a D-, I come out of it and go, oh, that was a C-plus show. Like, WrestleMania 32, I wrote about it. I wrote it in the intro before talking about the show. That was a terrible day, like, as a whole for me, because I had, like, a big paper that I had to do.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was watching this really bad WrestleMania show while I was pecking away at this paper. So it was just a bad day overall. But that was a better show than I remember it being. Not, it wasn't good, but it was better.
I have no memory of the match itself, other than, you know, the Brock doesn't want to work, you know, Doom Ambrose stuff, and Steel. Yeah. But I have that as a 1.75 in my spreadsheet of Doom.
Yeah, it's a lot better than that.
Okay, I'll have to check that out at some point.
A little bit out of the context of the time, the match does feel a lot better than that.
I do have, from the same show, the Shane McMahon Undertaker Hell in the Cell match with a dud rating and a note to it of actual garbage trash on my spreadsheet.
32, I had that at 1.5. Second worst show on the card.
Abhorrent, I thought that was. Just a miserable time.
Jiu-Jitsu Shane.
Yeah,
and Shooter Shane. Shooter Shane, there you
Fun fact about that WrestleMania, I had just broken up with my ex-girlfriend and I moved out of the apartment that day and I rushed to set up everything together so I could watch WrestleMania. Boy,
that didn't really lucky you.
They cheered you up.
It didn't really make me feel any better, let me tell you.
That was a 30-minute Triple H main event with a 15-minute Stephanie McMahon preamble. God.
Tyler with the bounce back mania where he gets a gun pulled on him.
Oh, man. Oh, I didn't know Pillman got booked on that show.
Would have been an improvement.
That's true.
I will say I'm a little, I am curious to see, although I actually have. I have a vague idea of how to get the shows on ESPN now, but I have no interest in spending that much money on a modern WWE pay-per-view. But I am intrigued to see how Brock versus Oba goes. I think that could be pretty fun this year. And, you know, I think if Gunther goes in there and does his stuff, and if Seth Rollins goes along with it, which is a big question. I think 2015 Seth Rollins would have been game to, like, just have the holy hell beat out of him so they could have a great match. 2026 Seth Rollins, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah, bad knees, bad back, can't draw. It's tough out here.
If they had any guts at all, Obafemi squashes Brock Lesnar in 3 minutes.
I mean, that's a smart booking, but that ain't what they're going to do.
They're going to do. This is going to be a 20-minute epic, and it shouldn't be. It should just be.
If they do, I will come on the show if someone reminds me in 2 weeks, and I will apologize for being wrong, but I just don't believe that they'll do it.
Well, Goba shouldn't be going 20 right now, at least.
No.
But, I think there's a good chance he loses.
Yeah, I honestly would guess that's it, and they'll be like, oh, he got the rub.
And it's like, no, not how that works.
To interrupt the Mania talk, just because this is a breaking news of... or I guess a breaking, not news story, but a potential news story, I guess.
It's April 1st. Remember, Fred.
It is April 1st. That's right. I don't want to get got like some of us were on the pre-show, Tyler. But if this is real John Alba, I'm currently making sure. And if I turn out to be wrong, fuck it. I don't care.
April Fools.
Yeah, Miss April Fools. Joke's on me. I'm an idiot. It's already known. John Alba is saying, I do believe, that the noise on Chris Jericho has flipped and that there is now talk that he is sticking with AEW, which, one, would be very funny with regards to how people will react. I think that will be... And I'm saying this as someone that thinks Chris Jericho's views away from the ring are not very good, and I'll leave it at that. But I don't think we'd have a friendly political conversation. But I do think that watching there'd be some Schadenfreude of the haters.
Well, they're in Winnipeg this week.
They are.
For what it's worth, Fightful has been saying some of the same things.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jericho. It's been, what, a year?
He's been gone about a year, yeah.
Yeah, because... he beat Hook at Dynasty... No, that was 2 years ago. Hook, that was when Swerve won the title.
Yeah, Hook brought it, beat him, and then retired the belt.
Yes. Yeah. So what was
his last match? Was... No, I lost to Bandido.
Bandido!
Yeah.
Yes, was that last year at Dynasty?
It was. Title
That's
versus
what I'm thinking of. Yes, I really liked that match.
Yeah, I think that was better than people gave it credit for.
Yeah, it's been a year. Have people kind of softened on? No, I don't think they have, but...
No. I mean, the truth is that he was showing his age towards the end there, towards the end of the run, and I think he's going to be in a tough spot because I just don't think he's up to keeping up with the top workers anymore.
I'm not going to count out Chris Jericho yet.
I'm not completely counting him out, but
he's a gimmick away from everybody tolerating him again.
Yeah. All we need is whatever the 2026 version of a little bit of the bubbly would be or whatever. I mean, I still have full faith in his ability to do the work away from the ring. I just worry that he's going to get in the ring and be worse than, like, Adam Copeland, you know?
He had – those Bandido matches were very good. I think the Hook feud really is where it really got, like the worm turned on Jericho a bit, even though, like, I was in the building for that Dynasty match, and I really liked it because the energy was really good.
It was like a good 3.25 star match. You know, yeah, I didn't hate it by any stretch.
Yeah, everybody was screaming at Jericho to retire, and it just felt like it felt hot. You know,
I just worry that like embracing that as a heel character is not going to work in 2026. I think it'll just be the wrong kind of heat, if you will. And yeah. Kind of had that towards the end of his run, last run.
Yeah, I think Jericho needed a little break to kind of reset, and now we can kind of reintroduce him. You know, he was at the point where he was losing a Hook and losing to like the ROH titles. So
yeah,
he was kind of in his I'm losing to Fandango at WrestleMania stage, and he needed a little break.
Yeah,
so,
I think the reaction to whenever he showed up on screen is like the worst thing that ever happened in the history of wrestling was a little much.
Yeah,
and I'm not defending the run in general. I'm just saying like within them, a bit over the top.
Yeah, where would he slot in right now?
He's got to be like a upper mid Carter kind of guy. You can't have him in the title picture.
Yeah, because the world title picture feels set. I've written about it. I think Darby's challenging at Double or Nothing.
They seem like they're setting that up for sure. Maybe
winning. You know, that little 2-week run is there. You know, TNT is Fletcher. Continental is Mox.
I think the smartest thing to do with him would be stick him in the tag division. Where you can,
yeah, but with who though? More.
I mean, frankly, you could really probably set him up with anyone that's kind of, you know, unaffiliated.
Maybe old Brian Keith and Big Bill can take him out, get a little revenge, and he'll need a partner.
Yeah, oh, I mean,
he'll just be Sammy Guevara.
I was gonna say, welcome to LFI.
I will always. I'm the last man going down with the Sammy Guevara is good, actually, ship. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he should be, like, a main eventer or should ever have been referred to as a pillar or anything. But, like, he's a really solid, like, mid-card pissant heel. And I think he just needs to be used in that spot. And we need to stop, like they got a stench on him for some reason. And I can't really figure it because he's a good performer, man.
Chris Jericho and LFI. I smell money. Chris Jericho and Rush. Hola, amigo. How you doing?
Corazon de Leon is back.
Oh, Corazon de Leon and El Toro Blanco. Yes. Oh man, how's Chris Jericho gonna end up in CMLL this time? Are they gonna let him back after that Mystico match?
I'd have to think they would. I'm not defending it again because I was not a good match, but I think CML would because right now CMLL, for better or worse, is very much in the like let's get the Americans on here. You know, I mean, the hell they just gave MXM like a big couple weeks of a push.
Yeah, I was talking and I forgot about that run he already did that already kind of burned some people. Jericho forgot about that altitude, brother.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's going to show up. He's going to have the dad six pack. I mean, and God bless him because it's, I mean, look, it's better than I can manage. But like, and he's going to cut some good promos probably, and probably people on the internet will be mad.
Ooh, what if we get Ospreay Jericho at Wembley? The rematch. I'm sure people won't be mad at that.
No, man. No, I can't even go along with that as a bit. I cannot endorse this. We got like the thing is, it's just, you know, like I don't even want to see like Jericho Andrade because Andrade's been too damn good. You know, yeah. Like I just don't want a big Andrade match to turn into like, let's see if we can carry Jericho to a 3-star. You know, I don't.
It's going to be interesting to see, but I'm not going to count him out just yet. Not yet. Ooh, well, if Darby wins the world title, which I think is a slight possibility, that could be like his one defense is Jericho.
And then I think that'd be all right.
TV.
Yeah, but I don't. Even a pay-per-view cycle I could see, you know, where Jericho does not wrestle and just cuts promo the entire time.
Yeah, I'm like three steps down the line already. Yeah. But, you know, Jericho coming back, I'm not immediately against it. Just
Tyler, your take, because you're sitting over here looking real confused, possibly while watching J.J. McCarthy make decisions.
No, I'm watching clips of Fernando Mendoza's pro day because I am a degenerate.
I wonder where he's going.
Yeah, it's a big mystery. I think that what we're going to actually see at Wembley is Omega versus Ospreay for the title. I think Omega's beating MJF not because MJF should lose, but because I think the drawing match is Omega and Ospreay because one, it's the third of the series. Two, it's fresh for the UK audience because the first one was in the Tokyo Dome. The second one was at Forbidden Door in Toronto. Now, Kenny got one in like his two homes, I guess you could say. Now Will gets one in his. And three, you want to have the crowning moment for Ospreay. And who's going to give him a better match, MJF in that spot or Omega? I think Omega is going to be the one to give him that better match. Plus, you got the story of everybody wanting to come after him if he wins the title. It feels to me like guys aren't going to talk about beating Kenny for the title unless Kenny's going to get the title. That just feels too coincidental in my mind. If it's MJF, Ospreay, I think it's still going to be really good, but if you want the big drawing match, I think it's Omega because you've already seen Ospreay and MJF in Wembley. Yeah, it was 3 years ago, and you can still run it, and I don't think it's a big deal. But to me, I think it's going to, no matter what, maybe that's the wrong way to phrase it. I just think it's going to be Omega winning the title in British Columbia and then having a couple good defenses and then dropping it at Wembley to Ospreay is like a coronation, passing of the torch kind of moment. And I think it could be pretty incredible if they do it right, which based on the first two matches, I have no doubt that they will.
Yeah. And then Kenny hasn't main evented an All In. So that would be a good way of making sure he's in that like lineage of it. But if he doesn't win the title, I don't know what he's doing at All In. Maybe they push the swerve thing out all the way to Wembley, but I don't. That feels like a while for a third match.
You know what they could do?
Yeah.
Drop him down to the TNT title mix and have him face Fletcher.
That would be a very interesting match. It'd be an odd slotting for Kenny, but in order to just get that match, I wouldn't mind it at all. I think what MJF's doing right now and what I'm kind of foreseeing, because he knocked Hangman out of the title picture. He's got Omega coming up, and I think he's wrestling Darby at Double or Nothing in New York. I think he's going through, like, the guys who you would consider, like, you know, kind of like the soul and the, like, faces of the company. So you've got, like, Darby, who's been, like, that, like, steady, like, heartbeat of the company since, like, day one. Hangman was the main character. I really don't like that term, but that's what they called him. And you've got Kenny, who's Kenny. This is all here because of him. So I think all that's building up to set Will up as this is the new face of the company. This is the new heart and soul of the company going forward. That would be like kind of my headcanon of it. But I obviously wouldn't mind if Kenny Omega was the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. That would be awesome. So if that happens, through everything I said, I'll just take the good Kenny main events.
Just a quick note on doing three consecutive pay-per-view main event things. That's really not an AEW thing, and the closest they've ever come to doing like back-to-back have been like Adam Page last year with the Steel Cage, Full Gear, Samoa Joe title drop, and then the four-way the following month. And then at the end of 2024, they did the same kind of thing with Orange Cassidy. Really still like, you know, one of those weird things in the history of the company is like, remember when Orange Cassidy was treated as a main eventer for the second time?
Almost got there too.
Honestly, should have. They just kind of were like, yeah, we're not doing this anymore. Just which I don't think was deserving off of the performances he had. But
could he have beaten? That was when Max was camp, right?
Yeah, actually, that was against. No, he was against. That was Moxley.
The Mox feud.
Early Death Rider stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of dropped the ball on his end there. Is that a hot take?
Like I thought he held up okay in the first match, then the four-way. I can't blame him so much for the four-way.
The match was fun. He wasn't bad in the matches. I'm saying, like, the story, like, he brought to, like, that early, like,
I don't everybody think was brought anything good.
Everybody was, like, trying to rally the troops, and he was like, I don't want to because I lost all my friends the last time. Like, I get, like, I understand that story. I just don't think he got that across well at the time. Yeah, so I think that also hurt. And then you go from that to the four-way to Adam Copeland, and you get the Death Riders.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. Not to relitigate that.
at least we still have the Birchachos to outpace the Death Riders as the worst main event scene in AEW history.
That's not getting touched. I don't have any hot takes there.
Speaking of hot takes, my hot take, if we go back to the Mania topic, is that one of the matches that I'm convinced is one of the best Mania matches of all time is that WrestleMania 30 mid-card Daniel Bryan versus Triple H match where Danielson just saved the show literally after CM Punk quit, and they were like, oh God, what do we do? And I still hold that the Triple H win was a great, like, into a story / setup for the main event. And I adore that match.
Just a friendly reminder, Fred, that wasn't a mid-card match. That was the opener.
That's right. Yeah, it was the opener. I actually thought it was a few matches in. My bad, but yeah, still.
And it was a few matches in because the pre-show had matches.
True, fair enough.
I was there. That match was great. I was sat next to two Triple H fans. Of course, the guy comes to cut the grass while I'm recording. I haven't done a podcast in months. So, of course, the hour I need to talk is the hour when he's cutting the grass. Phenomenal. Love it. Fantastic. But anyway.
In all fairness, I don't think your mic's really picking it up, so.
Great. I turned on the echo canceling, I think it was. But, that match was very good. I was sat next to two ladies who really liked them some Triple H. Either that or they didn't like Daniel Bryan. Either way, they weren't cheering for him. And, that just made the whole experience better. So, yeah, really good stuff, that match. It is 27th on the list, so just outside of the top half. I can only enjoy Triple H so much, which
I dropped five on that match. I don't mind saying it. I went 4.75 for the main of the same show. So
The main event was
Batista and Orton.
Yeah, yeah, it was a three-way. I didn't like that one as much on rewatch. That was definitely an on-the-night thing. But yeah, I don't remember that match as much. Like, I remember, like, the Batista bomb RKO through the table where Orton caught one of the TV monitors on his back. And I was like, ooh, that was a...
Yeah.
This is why you don't do spots. Oh. But I don't remember that as vividly as I remember during the John Cena Bray Wyatt match, Teddy Hart and his crew coming in, and like there was some dispute about seating in the section next to me, and so I think he like got some people kicked out of their seats, watched the John Cena match, and then left. He was in full gear, by the way. I had never seen Teddy Hart wrestle before then. The only reason I knew who he was is because he was geared up. He had all his gear on.
Jesus.
Oh, there's my Teddy Hart story.
What a human being.
Oh,
I'm going to move on before I say something possibly legally actionable.
Yes, let's do that.
But yeah, I just adore those matches. Like that was the period I got back into WWE when we had the whole Bryan Danielson run, and I just thought that stuff was fantastic.
Isn't it great that we had Bryan Danielson in WWE for a few years and that made things like tolerable?
And they even like used him properly for a year or two there.
Yeah.
You gave him the title, then immediately went to title challenger Kane for God knows what reason.
Then he broke his neck and retired, and I was really sad about it.
Yeah. And then things were absolutely fine in the company. Don't worry about it.
And then he comes back. They treat him like a mid-carder until I think something had, like, his babyface run bombed so badly that they turned him heel, and he ends up winning the world title, and he ends up having one of the best Mania matches ever as a result.
With
Kofi Mania.
Yeah, and hanging out with the Vintner.
Yes. Spoiler alert, that match is in the top 10.
Nice.
Where? You'll have to find out.
Read it.
SuitWilliams.com.
Get that plug in again. Yeah, I was not that big on the... Yeah, I actually like the Kofi one. I was going to say I didn't see it here, but yeah, I got a 4.5. That was a damn good one. A very random one here that I have at the 4.5 line is the WrestleMania 38 Night 2 Raw Tag Team title match of the Street Profits and Chad Gable and Otis challenging Randy Orton and Riddle. Weird. I love that match, apparently.
Hey. 38 Night 2. I liked it. 3.5.
All right. My high school classmate, Chad Gable, by the way.
How about that? El Grande Americano, the original. He probably should have beat Gunther that one time. But that one was good. Shame the Street Profits fell in that ditch with Bianca Belair.
God. Talk seriously.
But yeah, that was good. RK-Bro, man, Matt Riddle. Remember that.
If only Matt Riddle didn't do abhorrent things outside the ring. Could have been a legend. But alas.
If only Matt Riddle wasn't Matt Riddle.
Speaking of matches that outkicked their coverage, there's a Sheamus versus Cesaro match somewhere.
Oh, not, yeah, that one rocked.
Sheamus versus Riddle, I mean.
That was good
WrestleMania,
too, yeah.
From WrestleMania Tampa. That was the match of the night. That's on the list. And I remember writing that it's a glimpse of what Riddle could have been if he wasn't who he was.
Yeah. Like, that,
I have that
could potentially fall in my top 50. I have it at a 4 flat, and that's about, you know, that's where the number 40 spot would start for me.
Yeah, 4.5 I went on it. It is number 29 on the list between the women's three-way from WrestleMania 32, Sasha, Charlotte, Becky, and the Mania 39 Night 1 main event, Usos versus Steen Erico.
That was a great match too. I went 4.5 on that one. With the last really last good. Gasps of the Usos actually being pretty good.
Yes, that was the that was where it peaked. They went from pre-show to main event, had a good main event, and it the ride's been downhill ever since. And now they are allegedly going to be wrestling iShow Speed and Logan Paul at WrestleMania.
All the stars.
All the stars.
I just another one sticking they, out here on my list. Okay,
hold on. While we're on the Usos, did you know they changed their music this week on Raw?
I heard that that happened, and I just like no WWE self-preservation, you know, like instincts whatsoever. Like, okay, we have an act that is almost entirely about the theme song. Let's change the theme song.
Is it generic Hawaiian music .mp4?
It is. It's like a TNA sound of like sound alike of his old music of it's That's just so Muse funny. And when he go like he goes to do the yeeting, he goes to do like the run it back, and he goes to yeet, and the yeet's like half powered, and it's like oh no,
oh boy,
they screwed this up bad.
As an old, my favorite WWE messed up with the theme song example is when they tried to give Victoria in like 2003 a, it was Tattoo, I think, with all the things she said. And like she did what felt like an 18-minute dance sequence at the beginning of her entrance on a very random Raw. And it was just like, no, this isn't working.
Yeah, they changed it to... It was a song with like Nicki Minaj before she got famous. I don't remember the song, but I remember it was Nicki Minaj before she got big. And it was like, man, how'd they get that? How'd they score that? And then she was out of the company by the time Victoria, by the time Nicki Minaj did get big. So,
yeah.
There you go. Ah, well.
Nevertheless.
I got a couple matches that I want to mention.
Should
deserve some consideration for these top lists. One of them
the WrestleMania Remember Some Guys show.
Let's do it.
And it's probably just for nostalgia reasons. I love WrestleMania 20. It's probably my favorite WrestleMania.
Yes.
It's not necessarily phenomenal, but I think two matches on there really hold up for me, and your mileage is going to vary with the first one because it's got Chris Benoit. That triple threat title match is still to this day one of my favorite matches because I think they built it so incredibly well, and it extra sucks that it's Benoit's crowning moment because of what happened outside of the ring, but I thought they peaked it perfectly, and everybody in that building wanted him to win, and then makes Triple H tap out, and I just thought it was so brilliantly done the way they built it, and then the way they intertwined the Triple H Shawn Michaels feud that culminated, I think it was at Bad Blood, like a few months later, which had that god awful Chris Benoit Kane match. But that was one of my favorites. I rewatched it a while back, I gave it 4.5. I love that match, and then Eddie Guerrero versus Kurt Angle had one of my favorite finishes of all time. And undoing the boot, and Kurt Angle holds it up like what? And then the small package, because it makes Kurt look strong because Eddie is just a little cheating bastard. And it was just a technical masterpiece.
He undid the boot because the Angle had been working over the ankle so much and like wrecked it. And the thing about that match is like the crowd, like at the start of it, is kind of cold for it. Because Angle had like just turned and it was kind of weak, and the show was kind of
it didn't
long
help
too.
That they died because of it was the Victoria Molly Holly match. As Angle's making his entrance, Molly Holly's getting her head
He's
shaved.
Still getting her head shaved, yes. They did a whole video package, and then Kurt Angle comes out and they're just on the stage, and Kurt Angle does not acknowledge it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that match was very good. I went 4 on it. Really good stuff. And then that three-way main event, I'll be talking about that match in depth later in the countdown.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a surprise to anyone, really, unless like you're just completely unable to watch Chris Benoit, which, hey, I can't blame you. Listen, I remember the first...
The Family Annihilator penalty is a rare one, but a necessary one.
It took, what was the first time you guys saw Benoit after?
Like, it took me about like 8 years to get back into wrestling full time after that happened. I mean, I was also at the tail end of high school, and hey, I finally have friends. I can go do things with people. So I had less time to like devote to, you know, sports and stuff. And wrestling was one of the first things to fall off. That it just killed my love of it.
I came in the summer after that. So I started watching in summer 08. And I kind of like, I knew like what had happened like later on, but I didn't. I was able to kind of like compartmentalize that in a way. So I didn't have much of a problem watching the Benoit matches during this show, during the tour. I'm not, you know, I don't have a problem watching the Benoit matches during the 97 rewatch. It's not that I'm going to seek them out, but if they come up, they come up. And, there was a recent match on As Good As It Gets volume where he's got Nancy in his corner and that one was a little tough, but
I did not see him in a wrestling context until like that one time New Japan was just like, here's some of the stars of former Best of the Super Juniors, Chris Benoit. Yeah. And it was like, what the fuck, guys?
Yeah.
It's like, were they showing like finals or was it during like a...
It was just like a clip thing to hype for the next one. And they were just like, look at these dudes that were in previous ones. Tiger Mask, Owen Hart, Chris Benoit. Like, no.
Oh, I haven't thought of him in a while.
And then, a bit after that, I was like, for whatever reason, I think because the network was fairly new, and I was like, let's just watch the good matches from the Vengeance pay-per-views, because that was how the networks were structured.
Yeah.
And I was like, the first two good ones were Chris Benoit matches that were like 3¾, 4-star matches, and you watch them, and both of them probably involve a heel female manager that Chris Benoit gets his hands on, and you're like, no! And like, one time, like, the first time I was like, nope! Don't like this. And then the second time, I think it was a Booker T Benoit match was the second one, and Charmel was coming out. And I was like, oh, I hope this doesn't go where I think it does. And then it did. And you're like, oh, son of a bitch.
Man, how many times did they run this?
Like, literally consecutive years of, like, righteous babyface Chris Benoit getting his hands on the heel lady manager for a little bit. And normally that would just be like, this is what old school wrestling was like. And unfortunately, in this case, it was the Family Annihilator. So,
yeah.
God bless. What a fucking terrible story.
But yeah, Angle Guerrero was good. Pivot out of that one.
Yeah, hard turn. Ray Eddy also pretty good, even if it had a really hokey story with the whole
Well, the story hadn't started yet. That one
Yeah, I have
Eddie
a terrible
wanted to beat Ray because he hadn't yet, and they were tag champs. And a solid opener. And they would go on to the matches would go on to be better. It was the start of a story, so I give them a little grace there, which is a little weird for a main, but
another really unexpected one I have on my list here is John Cena challenging Rusev for the U.S. title at 31.
That was good.
The
tank entrance.
Oh no, I'm thinking of. I was about to say his selling of the ankle, but I was thinking of the Jack Swagger match where everybody thought, where everybody started thinking, oh man, Rusev's like he could be something.
I really could have been if, like, that wasn't the creative low point of WWE. Like, just literally some of the worst booking ever in the company for a while there.
I don't know what his peak would have been. He maybe was, like, a heel that the world champ beat sometimes.
Yeah, but basically. I think that could have been it. I don't think he would have built the company around him or anything.
Good tag champion, maybe, you know? Yeah. But
Icy title that run.
Yeah, but yeah, that was a good one. Cena's got a lot of like Mania matches where I'm like, that was a lot better than I thought it would be. And then he's got the Miz match, which is, I believe that's the worst WrestleMania main event I have rated.
Ooh, that's a good, interesting question. I don't know if I have that readily available.
Because I didn't rate Hogan Yokozuna.
Yeah, that wouldn't get a rating.
Hogan Slaughter, I went one. Sid Undertaker, I went 1.5. And then Triple H Roman, I went 1. And yeah, Triple H Orton, I went 1.5. Yeah, nothing beats the 3/4 star Miz versus John Cena match. Yeah, hey, swings and roundabouts.
It was barely a match. That thing was just an angle to get The Rock in there.
Oh, yeah, it was a match. It was a bad match. Don't shortchange him. That was a bad match.
Respect WrestleMania main eventer, The Miz.
I will not.
Okay.
I remember a forum I was on was, I mean, it was such a bad time in the history of WWE, and that was primarily what that forum was watching at that point. They were like, you know who the wrestler of the year is? The Miz.
And it's like, oh, this isn't for me anymore.
You know, from a kayfabe perspective only, like accomplishments, I don't know. Maybe they got a point.
Yeah,
no, they were. It was not a kayfabe discussion.
Of course, it wasn't a kayfabe discussion. But I mean, the guy did beat Cena at Mania, even if it was, you know.
Yeah,
this was no PWI ranking here.
He was tag champ and U.S. champ and won Money in the Bank and cashed it in. So like, yeah. PWI is probably top 20 that year, but that says a little bit more about the business we were in.
Yeah. One more that I will mention and then I'll stop. Better than it had a right to be probably was the WrestleMania 13 Chicago Street fight of washed up LOD and Ahmed Johnson against Crush Farouk and Savio Vega.
That match, I went 1.5 on it.
Damn!
It's a 1.5, but it's like a wild 1.5. Like, it's a good 1.5. Like, it's a great 1.5 star match. It's a great time. Like, it's not like... It's like how I went dud on Shane McMahon versus The Miz, but also, my rating for that is dud, but also 5. Like, this... Like the Chicago.
Okay, you gotta speak on that one for a while then.
Because the Shane McMahon tore his quad, and then Snoop Dogg came in and saved the spot.
I forgot that was the Snoop match.
he goes to Shane and he's like,
little known ring veteran, Snoop Dogg.
He gets in the ring, he looks at Shane, he goes, "You all right, cuz?" Dying.
It's damn McMahon quads.
Oh, it's the best. It is the funniest thing I've ever seen on a wrestling show. And I watched Prime Chuck Taylor.
I gotta disagree just because I think the funniest thing I ever saw on a wrestling show was when Papa McMahon tore both of his quads.
Yes, at the end of the Rumble,
and everyone was just confused as hell.
Oh, they botched Cena and Batista go over the top rope at the same time, better than Luger and Brett did when they were trying to do it on purpose.
Yeah,
the refs are trying to like cobble something together. Vince is out. He throws the jacket down. Just slams his thigh.
Obliterates his legs.
Oh my god!
What a phenomenal Stu. Anything else you want to add before we let you go? After just a fun discussion.
You know, I think it'd be good if I just ran down like what the top 50 was up. What I've had revealed up to this point.
50, sure, go for
11,
it.
11. So. Number 50 is The Undertaker versus Edge from Mania 24. Number 49 is Rey Mysterio, Kurt Angle, and Randy Orton for the world title from WrestleMania 22. That is one of the greatest one-man shows I've ever seen with Kurt Angle. He was an animal in that match. Number 48, the aforementioned Eddie Guerrero-Kurt Angle match from Mania 20. Number 47 is John Cena versus The Rock. I believe this is the first one.
28 or 29?
No, it's for the title. It's from 29. So John Cena versus The Rock 2 is 47. John Cena versus The Rock 1 is 46. So they're back to back. Number 45, the most begrudging 4 I ever gave out. Triple H versus The Undertaker, Hell in a Cell. Number 44 is Austin Rock 3 from Mania 19 in Seattle. Number 43, I am on the side of it was good. The Iron Man match, Shawn and Bret. I went a solid 4 on it. Number 42, TLC 2 from WrestleMania 17. Number 41, Hogan versus Rock from Mania 18. Number 40, the oldest match on the list, Hulk Hogan versus King Kong Bundy in the cage.
That one surprised me.
Really, that one's, it's awesome. It's Hogan at his peak and a big guy bumping for him.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little surprised Hogan Rock was so low. I mean, the work was fine. The psychology was good, but that atmosphere, I thought would bump it up a little higher.
It was kind of a dead Mania, so it was the hottest thing on the card by, like, default.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. I can't in my head bump it up much higher than a lot of these. 39, I'm at Warrior Savage, the career ending match.
Great match.
38, the WrestleMania 39 tag team showcase match. Alpha Academy versus the Street Profits versus the Viking Raiders versus Braun Strowman and Ricochet. The match rocks. Number 37, same show, Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul. Yes, Logan Paul made the list. I'm as shocked as you. Number 36, the most recent match on the list, Io Sky, Bianca Belair, and Rhea Ripley from Mania last year. Number 35, Charlotte versus Rhea Ripley in the empty building. Number 34, Charlotte versus Rhea from Mania 39. Number 33, Seth Rollins versus Cody Rhodes. Number 32, from WrestleMania 32, Chris Jericho versus AJ Styles. Number 31, from WrestleMania 31. This is a trend. Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. Number 30, Sasha Charlotte Becky from Mania 32. 29, the aforementioned Matt Riddle versus Sheamus match. 28, the aforementioned Usos versus Owens and Sammy match. 27, Bryan versus Triple H. 26, Undertaker versus CM Punk. 25, Floyd Mayweather versus The Big Show. 24, Undertaker versus Batista. Number 23, The Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels. 2, the second one. I'm not that much of a hot take artist. 22, Shawn versus Ric Flair, the retirement match. 21 is Money in the Bank 1. 20, Edge versus Mick Foley, the hardcore match. 19, Brock Lesnar versus Kurt Angle, where both men almost went out with broken necks. 18, Steamboat Savage. 17, Cody versus Roman 1. Spoiler alert, Cody Roman 2 did not make the list. Number 16, Shawn Michaels versus Chris Jericho, WrestleMania 19. Number 15, Savage versus Flair from Mania 8. Number 14, buckle up, Ronda Rousey and Kurt Angle versus Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. I was in the building for this one, folks. It was awesome.
I actually dropped 3¾ on that, so I'm not going to give you shit over it. It was fun. They made Rousey look like a star, so.
You don't want to hear my rating on that one. number 13, Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar for the Universal title. Number 12, Charlotte versus Ronda Rousey, Mania 38. And number 11, the last match I have revealed at this time, Gunther versus Drew McIntyre versus Sheamus for the never open weight Intercontinental Championship match. And then your top 10 will begin being revealed on April the 8th. And then I will be revealing one a day, every day, up to WrestleMania 42, where I will be reviewing those shows live. SuitWilliams.com, SuitWilliams.com.
Fantastic stuff, Suit. Thank you for joining us. Fun show. And I think that'll wrap us up. So check out Suit's writing. He's one of my favorite writers in the wrestling sphere right now. And I always enjoy just talking about matches. It's fun shit.
There we go.
Anything else before we let you go?
Follow me on Twitter at Suit Williams. All social medias, all relevant ones where I can talk about wrestling. And yeah, I've plugged everything already. WrestleMania preview. I will be reviewing Dynasty over at SuitWilliams.com as well to bring it back to AEW at the tail end. I will be reviewing AEW Dynasty over at SuitWilliams.com. So check that out. We've got MJF Omega. You got Cope and Christian versus FTR. Look out for Nick Wayne. Who said that?
Oh. He has been conspicuously quiet, but working a couple Ring of Honor tapings. So, you know,
the
signs are there.
Keep an eye out. I mean, you can't screw both Canadians. So maybe you give them that one. But yeah, that's what I got. SuitWilliams.com, VoiceOfTheWrestling.com, Voice of the Wrestling Podcast Network, Good, the Bad, the Hungry.
Hell yeah. Tyler, anything before we head out?
Suit rules.
That's it. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you next time. Take care.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns on individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.